Good morning, everybody. My name is Rob Loxail, and we will start this session, which is sort of an introduction to those of you who are for the first time attending a RIPE meeting. It's a two-part presentation. I will give a short introduction on RIPE, a little bit about the history and how we work and what we are supposed to do. And that will be followed by a presentation by Axel Pavlik, the managing director of the RIPE NCC, who will explain the role of the RIPE NCC and the relationship with RIPE. And at any moment in time you have questions, please don't hesitate to raise your hand and ask your question. This will take approximately 1 hour, and so by 12:30 we hope to finish, and then lunch starts. So, welcome again. As I said, I will go a little bit through the history of why we started this exercise called RIPE, in terms of reference, how we are organized, how the meetings work, a little bit about the working groups, because we will see that most of the work takes place in working groups, and last but not least, our policy process. We started in 1989. That's a long time ago already. It's a long time in years. It's certainly a long time ago in network years. We had the first meeting of 14 participants, and the meeting lasted half a day. As you will be aware, things have changed a bit. We are meeting here for a whole week in Istanbul, and there are a little bit more than 14 people present. Why was this started? It was basically started because networking started in Europe, and networking in those days was a very political issue. Political in the sense of a lot of government involvement. And governments had the idea, especially European governments, that among the two main streams of networking technology, one was good and the other one was bad. And the one they picked as being good was one that was developed by mainly European PTTs in the framework of a telco organization that doesn't exist anymore, the CCITT. And which is now part of the ITU, the International Telecommunications Union of the United Nations. The technology went under the name of Open System Interconnect, OSI. It was based on a thorough theoretical framework on how computer communications should work, with nicely divided functions and layers upon layers of functionality, 7 layers, matching number 7. It had two characteristics. It was good because it was invented by the phone companies, and that phone companies in the late 80s in Europe were mainly owned by the European governments, so that's a good thing. And the other good thing is that it was not invented by the Americans, and that's what made the other technology, which we know as the internet technology based on TCP/IP, a bad technology. Bad because it was not invented by European telephone companies. Now, there was one major difference apart from a different approach in philosophy and implementation. A major difference in the late 80s was that the OSI networking existed only as a huge stack of papers and documents, whereas TCP/IP came as software, free, with you favorite flavor of Unix systems, specifically the BSD implementation of Unix, came with TCP/IP embedded in the system. So for people who needed computer networking, and in those days that was mainly the academic research world, the choice was simple. That is the one technology that existed on paper and not as products, not as software, and the other one existed in software with free free documentation and was there in your mainstream computing systems already. So TCP/IP for the networking community was good because it existed. Now, when you start playing with TCP/IP on a European scale as universities, it's nice to have it on your campus, but of course you want to connect to your friends in another university, and then you find out that you need to coordinate certain things, like you do not invent your own address space because it will clash, and you have to start thinking about routing. BGP was not invented yet, so routing was a highly interesting game, mainly a manual game, setting up routing tables by making agreements with your friends. So just for out of curiosity, here you see the list of 14 people who came together for the first time in Europe to discuss how to coordinate the internet, what we now know as the internet in Europe. You might recognize some of these names. Some of these people are present here today. And you will also see that with one or two exceptions, it was all pure academic and research networking. What we quickly decided to do was that singular meeting was not enough to fix all our problems or coordination efforts forever. So we decided we need some regular meetings. We also decided not to build a heavyweight organization to take care of this and to do this on a voluntary basis without too much overhead. But one of the things we realized we have to do is just to write down who we are and what we intend to do, our terms of reference. And they state what is still the case, and our reason of existence is we are there to coordinate the operation of IP networks, coordinate, not to run them. We don't do standards. Standards, internet standards, are made by the IETF, the Internet Engineering Task Force. For some reason, I can't track back, but we made a very important decision. We are not involved in domain names assignment issues, which is today an extremely hot item on the internet that has nothing to do with the operation of IP networks. And as I said, we don't do network operation. That's the individual ISPs are responsible for their network. But there are certain aspects of the internet that only work if ISPs get together and agree on common policies, common practice, common understanding of network management issues. Oops, wrong button. You can't read this, you don't need to read this today, but this is the full text of our terms of reference, and by the length of this, of our base document, you can see that we try to keep the administrative overhead to a minimum. And it basically says what I just explained. So how is RIPE organized? RIPE today is not much different from the first meeting of 14 people. We are not a legal organization. We are people like you who come together to discuss common problems and, where necessary, agree on common practices. You don't need a formal legal entity for that. So there is no formal membership which has the nice added on has a nice add-on that if you don't have formal members, you don't have to worry about voting, how to vote. We don't vote. It's very simple. Saves a lot of hassle. Because the issues we tackle, you cannot decide by vote. If a group of people come together to discuss a technical issue and it is in the environment where we are operating on, where every ISP is responsible for his or her own network, it is nonsense to think that a group of people sit together and they vote on how everybody should work. That doesn't work. You go home and your boss tells you, oh, forget about it. Our business plan says we do this. So, no votes. But sometimes it would be nice to have common understanding how to tackle a common problem. And there is a magic word, and that is consensus. That means if there is a general feeling that we should tackle a certain problem in a certain way, you have the feeling that most people agree with that. And then you write that down, not as a decision, because we don't decide things, but as a recommendation. And you go home and you do it, or you don't do it. That's up to you. But you know that there is a general feeling in the community that this might be the proper way to go ahead. And that is the meaning of this word, consensus. We do have a chairman, funny enough, because somebody has to organize meetings. Somebody has to keep an eye on progress in between meetings. And there are other organizations out there who would like to talk to us. So somebody should be the external contact point, and that's the role of the chairman. Since there are no voting procedures and no formalities, it's an extremely lightweight role organizational-wise. The chairman has no special say in things. Because the real work is done in working groups. As you will see in a minute, the way we organize this meeting is twofold. We have a few days of plenary sessions where presentations and discussions that regard everybody are taking place. But we also have working groups that are dedicated to particular subjects. I will go through the list of working groups in a minute. The idea is that wherever the community feels that it would be nice to have a common practice on a particular technical issue, that is better done in a working group than in a plenary session with 300 people around, and maybe not everybody is equally interested in a particular subject. Working groups usually have a relatively long lifetime, long being a few years, but sometimes a subject needs just either a quick resolution or it's a minor thing and it can be done without setting up a working group, but a small dedicated task force that exists for two or three right meetings will do the job. And sometimes during meetings, and we have them at this meeting, we have gatherings that are called birds of a feather meeting that usually concerns new subjects where one or two or a few of us think, hey, this is something we should tackle. So what we do then, we call a completely informal meeting, and in your program you will see the announcement of two of these meetings this week, where people interested in the subject get together and discuss not so much the ins and outs of the subject itself, but discuss whether some work on this or that area is needed or might be useful. And then usually the outcome of such a meeting is the conclusion, there's not enough interest to pursue this, or there is enough interest to do some work in this area, and then either a task force or a working group can be created. who attend our meetings? Well, as you see in this pie chart, it's a true international meeting. People from many, many countries are present here. And people come from a different background as in the very beginning. In the beginning we saw that it was nearly 100% from the educational and research world, and we see that that is now in the order of 10%, and we have 35% of the attendance coming from the pure commercial companies that run the bulk of the internet. But we also have representation from people in government, which is highly appreciated, because governments are again interested in networking affairs globally. And we have a healthy presentation, representation from other regional internet registries. Internet registries will be explained in more detail in the next talk, but you can for the moment regard this as the equivalent of a right meeting in the wider European area, but then in Africa, Latin America, Asia Pacific, and North America. That's the 18%. So you'll see a lot of our colleagues from the rest of the world as well. Working groups. We have about 10 working groups active today. I don't want to go in detail through the whole list. I'll pick two or three out, and in most cases the title, the name of the working group explains already what it is about. Like the address policy working group, one of the main issues, of course, in internet networking is the management of the IP address space. Oh, thank you. IP addresses, be it version 4 or version 6, at the end of the day, is a finite and from some respect viewed a scarce resource. So we should agree among ourselves on the rules on how to use this scarce resource, and that is the remit of the address policy working group. Handing out IP address blocks by the RAC and CC, as will be explained in a minute, necessitates good bookkeeping. We want to be able to explain to the world what happened with all these address blocks, and that's the main function of the RIPE database. We have a database working group that's very active in formulating requirements for the database. You as operators of networks might have uses for the database which are not covered by the current database functionality. The database working group is the place to discuss this. As I mentioned, we are not in the domain name business, but we are heavily involved in the domain name system, because sometimes people forget that the domain name system has two main functions. It translates domain names into IP addresses, and the other way around. Well, the other way around is our function, and that is, roughly speaking, half of the total DNS space. So we are extremely interested in the proper functioning of the domain name system, not so much in domain name registration policies. I'll skip a few working groups. You can find all details of all the working groups easy on the right website. The internet today is to a great extent geared around internet exchange points. So we have an a working group where exchange point operators and ISPs discuss their common interests. IPv6 is an interesting and very important new development on the internet. We have an IPv6 working group that does not deal with the IPv6 protocol definition, but deals with operational issues. People are starting to deploy IPv6 and find all sort of unexpected, interesting side effects of this new protocol. And this is the place where you can exchange operational experience and, in case of problems, try to find common solutions. A very important working group, of course, is the RIPE NCC Services Working Group that deals with all the services provided by the RIPE NCC and to be explained by Axel in the next presentation. This, again, is open to everybody. This is the way you can interact on a very direct basis with the RIPE NCC on their services, and that goes from requests to new services, evaluation of existing services, complaints about services, anything service related. So, how does this work? It's all very nice. Most of you come for the first time to a RIPE meeting and then you think, oh my god, I'm very interested in this or that, but then I have to go to all the RIPE meetings for the next few years. That is not true. We would welcome you to come to all the future RIPE meetings, but the minimum requirements to participate in the work of a working group is to have an email address, because not only we don't vote at meetings, but we don't take decisions at meetings. Decisions are based, the consensus is built on the mailing list of a working group. So even if you cannot participate in the RIPE meetings themselves, you can still fully participate in the work of a working group by subscribing to the mailing list. Do I have to be a member of the RIPE NCC organization to participate? Nope. Anybody can participate. There are no membership requirements. So the only thing you have to do is to, in case you're interested in one, two, or three or more of the working groups, is go to the website and subscribe yourself to the mailing list. You can find for each and every working group all the relevant documents produced by the working group. The minutes of all the meetings of working groups that took place during RIPE meetings are on the website, and of course an archive of the mailing list. So you can, if you're interested in a particular working group, you can get yourself up to speed relatively easy. Policy development. An important role of the RIPE and the RIPE working groups is what we call to develop policies. Policies, for instance, I gave an example already, how to deal with the distribution of the IP, both IPv4 and IPv6 address space. This is decided by the community, you and by nobody else. So we have a few principles that drive our policy development. And the four principles of the process is: it should be open, it must be open, it is open, anybody can participate either through fora like RIPE meetings or the mailing list. It is transparent, there are no secret documents, there are no hidden secret meetings, everything relevant to a particular policy is on the mailing list. It's developed bottom-up. It's you who are supposed to do it, and nobody else. And it is developed by the community, usually driven either by technology changes or by new technologies, protocols coming out of the IETF. And the whole thing must be documented and be freely available. One of the reasons the original OSI protocols never made it in real life was that the protocols, the text, were not available unless you were prepared to pay thousands of dollars, which was not a real incentive for research groups in universities to start playing with it. So it's a basic principle of the internet that whatever happens should be documented and must be freely available on the internet. And of course we followed that very good tradition. So these are the principles for that underlie under our development of policies. How does this work out? Well, it's not a top-bottom or from left to right process. It's more a circular process. Usually it starts in the lower left corner with a need for something. A need for either a new policy or a change in policy, or a removal of an old policy. And the need is usually driven, as I said, by changes in technology or requirements from the industry. Networking is a very dynamic occupation. So there is a need. The need can be discussed on mailing lists and open meetings. After a while, consensus, this magic concept, is reached, and then in most cases something has to happen, and very often the RIPE NCC is involved there. So it has to be put in practice by the RIPE NCC, but also by the members, the ISPs. That's the implementation. And then after a while, it's usually very healthy to evaluate whether the outcome of all this, the implementation, really covers the needs that started this whole thing. And sometimes it's yes, and sometimes things have changed in the outside world during this process, and there is a need for an adjustment of policy, so the whole circle can be played again. In the early days of RIPE, let's say till last year, the early 16 years, all this was done in a rather ad hoc, not documented manner, and with the ever-growing numbers of ISPs and new people getting involved in this game, we had to formalize some of this, and that resulted in something you probably can't read in detail, but there is no need. This is a relatively new document which describes in great detail basically the left half of this scheme. How you come from a need to consensus into in great detail, because you can imagine that this could be an endless discussion. We don't like endless discussions, so we agreed on a process with timelines, and that is basically what is written down here. So these are all small but very concrete steps to come from a brilliant or not so brilliant original idea to an outcome that can be consensus or no consensus. The nice thing about this scheme is we have documented how we come to decisions, which is very important nowadays if you think about government involvement in networking matters. Who takes these decisions? How do you reach a decision? That's what government people like to know. But now we have document explaining that instead of just saying, yeah, we meet from time to time. We have a document. That's good. Also, it makes the whole process a little bit more efficient because it's clear who plays which role in this. And most important, there are timelines, deadlines mentioned. So it. Hopefully, sometimes in the past we have had these discussions that went on for years because no clear conclusion could be reached. This is no longer possible. So that makes it more efficient. If there is a perception that something is needed and you can't reach an agreement or consensus within 6 months or maybe a year at most, then you better conclude. It's probably not worthwhile to go on with this. So we have a policy development process in place now, with, which is new for us, for you, for everybody. So we have been using this now for about 4 or 5 months, and of course we found out that in the details there are inconsistencies, so we are still slightly adjusting things, because, oh, we didn't think about this, oh, we forgot that, oh, this is really not very useful. But the main thing is now done, and there is a right document describing all this. And the RIPE NCC has a new policy development officer, or whatever your title is, Feliz. She is not responsible for policy, but she is responsible for other people following this stream and giving support there, because we are very international, but our working language is English, and we know that I'm not English, so for me it's a foreign language. And for most of our participants, English is a foreign language, which is no problem in the evenings at socials, in the bar. It's a bit more problem during meetings, and it can be a real problem if you want to write a precise document in a language which is not your own language. This is a function that is supported by the RIPE-NCC. They do not write the policy, but I can help you to write it, your ideas, in the way you want it, in English, so it makes your life easier. We can do that, but I don't think the majority of our community would be able to read it on the spot. Yeah. But as you will see from Axel's presentation, our working language is English, but our staffing of the RIPE NCC is very international. I think I've said all I wanted to say as by way of introduction. If you have questions now, fine, or if you want to wait till after Axel's presentation and you have seen the other part of this building, of RIPE and the RIPE NCC, that's equally fine. Axel.
Well, of course, I have my presentation presented in Turkish, prepared, but I've heard our working language is English, so I do it in English. If you find it. Very good, thank you. All right, good morning again. My name is Axel Pavlik. My email address is not on the slide, but it's axel@ripe.net. You might wonder, why another introduction? Haven't we just heard this all? No, you haven't yet. First of all, as Rob has already indicated, RIPE is very different from the RIPE NCC. The RIPE NCC is the RIPE Network Coordination Center, or that's the formal name, and yeah, there's more to that. The RIPE NCC is actually legally incorporated, while RIPE is not. RIPE is a bunch of meetings and a chairman and lots of attendees. Sorry, I'll say that. The RIPE hosts these meetings, while the Network Coordination Center acts as a secretariat to RIPE in between the meetings, basically. As Robert said, there were lots of things to do during the in between of the meetings, and there needs to be some consistency and continuity, and that's why we are here. So we give meeting support and in-between meeting coordination, and apart from that, we deliver services for our RIPE Network Coordination Center, RIPE NCC members, and also to the community at large. Short overview about the RIPE NCC history, corporate governance, if you want, some activities, and the international context, and of course, contact information at the end. So, again, why was an NCC needed, a Network Coordination Center? It was needed to continue the work, or to coordinate the work in between of the meetings. Too much work was there between the right meetings to be carried on by only volunteers. So it was decided it would be a good idea if we had a secretariat that would be there in between the meetings and carry on stuff. The major point also is that it was felt that a neutral organization was needed that would treat all the participants in very much the same way. It might have been nice if, well, I'm German, if Siemens would have stood up and said, oh, we are happy to host this, but then that was not felt to be appropriate. So a new neutral organization was set up under the umbrella of another organization in the beginning. So the point is that we have an ability to contact somebody in between meetings that is also persistent, doesn't go away, it's reliable, and more than a volunteer. So what is it now? On an abstract level, the RIPE NCC is part of a bottom-up industry self-regulatory structure. It's open, it's transparent, similar to what Rob has pointed out about the RIPE meetings, open and transparent. Everybody can become a member. It's transparent, as in all proceedings, all minutes, all board minutes are public, or made public. It's neutral and impartial, as I just said. On a more concrete level, it's a not-for-profit membership association under Dutch law. We sit in Amsterdam for quite a long time. We are incorporated in this way since 1997. The RIPE NCC exists, though, since 92. We are funded by our members and, as such, don't answer to anybody else, not even due to money concerns. We do what our members tell us. And I'll go into some of the details later on. As I said, membership is open to all interested parties. The membership, of course, has a few formal things to do. First of all, elect their representatives, their executive board. It's basically my bosses that tell me roughly where to go and what to do or what not to do and how much money to spend or not to spend. And the membership also guides the activities and the budget of the organization. And very formally, it approves the fees, the membership fees, and we call that the charging scheme. So big members pay more than small members, for instance. And the details of that, the membership decides once a year. All right. So who makes those rules? In the early days, the RIPE NCC, as I said, was created by the RIPE community, and it was magically agreed that some members of that community would contribute in a voluntary form. We call them contributors, and of course, as people contribute, then the community set the rules, still discusses, of course, the activities and the policies under which the RIPE NCC operates. Again, the policies, the rules under which the RIPE NCC activities are developed by the internet industry, by the internet community, if you want, by people coming to the RIPE meetings, by people on the relevant mailing lists. It's bottom-up industry self-regulation. That's very important to take away from here. It works through these open processes, the policy development process that Rob has pointed out, that is run during the RIPE meetings, on the mailing lists. It's open, it's easy and cheap to participate in. That's important. The industry regulates its own workings here through the RIPE NCC then. And that is important that you come, that you participate in discussions, that you make your wishes known, that you bring on new ideas, that you contribute to the discussions. Otherwise, this doesn't work. If the community decides, what the hell, then this fails miserably. So far it has been going very well, but we need to say that again and again. It is important that you show up, if not in person, then at least in the mailing list, that you support this whole operation. All right, then we are the membership association. What do the members do if the community does quite a lot? Okay, formally, the members contribute to the documents that set out our activities over the years. So that's the RIPE NCC. There is the executive board that has been elected by the members. There is the RIPE NCC Services Working Group that Rob has mentioned earlier on, which will happen this week during the Wednesday afternoon, which discusses in some more detail what we have been doing, what we should be doing, the quality of our services and so forth. And there are other inputs. There are other groupings like the IETF possibly. There is a membership survey that we've done repeatedly. All those contribute to discussions at the RIPE NCC of what we hear the community saying we should be doing. That then we condense once a year during summer when everybody else goes on holidays, in the Northern Hemisphere at least. We sit there and condense all these thoughts into the RIPE NCC activity plan for a given year. That then is presented, of course it's published on the website, and then it's formally presented to the general meeting. In the general meeting, the members don't formally approve this, but give us feedback, obviously, whether this is roughly where they want us to go or where they don't want us to go. And of course, as I said, the membership formally approves the fees. So without fees, there is no money. Without money, there is no budget. Without budget, there is no activity. So there is a very tight grip on this whole thing in the end. So the general meeting tells us what to do. Now, we have two general meetings a year. As I said, during the summer, we sit there and write this activity plan, and then during the typically September-October meeting, the general meeting gives us feedback on this. We have another general meeting. That's during the first half of the year, that's this week. So if you are a RIPE NCC member, if you want to come to the general meeting, which I would advise, if you haven't registered yet, then please do so. You can still do that at the registration desk in the front of the main meeting room. And as a bonus, as this is the first meeting in the year, you get something extra to do apart from hopefully approving the financial report. You also get to vote for board members. Isn't that exciting? So you should be coming. All right, so in some more detail, what are our tasks? On the abstract level, it's a coordination provision of services for our members and for the RIPE community. There are membership services, services that are available for members only, and that chiefly is the allocation of numbering resources, as in IP addresses and ASNs. Then there are things that we call coordination services that are available for everybody, not only for our members, but for the whole internet, for the community, for the greater good of the internet. That's, for instance, maintenance of the RIPOIS database. Then we have something that we call information services that rely on a few projects that we have running that dig out a lot of data about the running of the internet, and that we then condense and publish as scientific papers, but also hopefully to a four-sheet size summary that is then presented to, for instance, journalists or politicians who might not want all the scientific technical detail, but just an overview, knowing that there is detail and there is science under these folders. But that is what we call information services. Now, people call us a regional internet registry increasingly over the last few years, and that's one of the main tasks that we are performing, but I say, well, it's not that we are a regional internet registry, we are this membership association that does a lot of tasks. Being the RIR, performing the tasks of the regional internet registry is very important, though. So, what's in this? What we call responsible stewardship of internet resources, again, addresses and ASNs. We allocate them, we register them, we make sure that the data is consistent and available. There are other RIRs, AFRINIC, ARIN, APNIC, LACNIC, AFRINIC, ARIN, APNIC, LACNIC, and the RIPE NCC, all five of them. All right, so ourselves, we are located in Amsterdam, as you probably have guessed by now. We have about 90 staff, slightly more currently, from, I hear, roughly 30 nationalities, some count double or triple even. Lots of languages are spoken, working language is English. But of course, if you know we have somebody from your country, then you're also able to communicate in your mother language. That's not a formal offer, but we try to be very good and do what we can. Our members come from a lot of countries. We have 4,320, roughly, of them. It's members what are referred to as local internet registries, those people that get addresses from us. And we have a budget of just under 11 million euro for the last, I think, 3 years already. All right. Now, who is doing this? There's the executive board, and some of them are already here. Some will trickle in over the course of the week. You'll see them at the general meeting, certainly. That is me. Then we have a chief technical officer. That's Andrei Robaczewski, who is also here. Similar to our chief financial officer, Jochen de Roer, who will come, I think, this afternoon. So you'll see if you have any billing issues, you can take that up with him. And we have our head of member services and communications, and that's Paul Rendick, and he's sitting here in the front. Show yourself, Paul. Hello. All right. So then, not from the operational crew, but also advising, basically, what we call senior management in the companies, is Daniel Kahnberg. I think he's just left. Terrible people, this. Well, you know, these are the scientists, chief scientists and propeller heads. They just come and leave as they wish. All right, so you'd see him. He's a tall guy, and he's quite active in this as well. So, the Ripe Intercy service region. From Amsterdam, we look after what we call Europe, the Middle East, and parts of Central Asia. Now, I don't know what parts of Central Asia are, but you see it goes far to the east, and quite a bit to the west as well. The yellow stuff are the countries that we are looking after, and you see the appropriate apportioning for the other areas as well. The other areas, just as a matter of interest, are based in Chantilly, that's around Washington for Aaron. Lucknick is in Uruguay, Montevideo. Afrinic is scattered around the continent a bit. They have their administrative center on Mauritius and their operations center in South Africa. And Epinic sits in Australia, in Brisbane these days. So, you see from the years that actually the Ripe NCC was the first to take on this task of the regional internet registry, and the others formally followed quite quickly, APNIC. Erin was similar to us there before in some other codes, but they followed this regional internet registry, not-for-profit membership association thing in 97. LACNIC was formally recognized in 2002, and Afrinic only last year. Then we have something that we call the Number Resource Organization, which is basically just the regional internet registries working together, coordinating their work quite closely. Yeah, that's the NRO, and you see the five dots in there, which very cutely represent the RIRs, obviously. Isn't that clever? Then we have the IANA, that's the Internet Assigned Numbers Authority, also a very long existing set of people that allocate addresses to us. We need to get them from somewhere. That's where it is. The operational context, the allocation of resources, and this one goes from the top to the bottom, in that we get our address blocks from IANA, we give them on to our members. But you see the arrows are dual way, so there's something going up as well, and that is the bottom-up industry self-regulation in terms of policies. The right community sets the policies under which we, or the rules just, under which we allocate those address blocks to our members, and also the regional communities around the world decide which policies IANA is using to allocate the address blocks to us. So this bottom-up thing goes all the way there to the IANA processes as well. Then there's the overall political context. There's ICANN. IANA currently is part of ICANN, and we have formed the NRO to be the one mouth, basically, for the RIRs, the one contact point into the original Internet Registry system. So if you don't know whom you should be talking to, the NRO is there to look after you and will refer you to the to your local area possibly. Okay, if you go home, the only thing I really want you to remember about the RIPE NCC is that it's not a profit association, that it's legitimate and stable. We are around for quite a time, as I said, since 92 already. We are the bottom-up, or part of the bottom-up self-governing structure. We are open and transparent, neutral and impartial. And that's that. There's a pile of contact information. You also get that, of course, with your pack. Just walk up to our staff members if you have any concrete questions or any concerns. We also have a, what do we call that, Paul? A service center? Is it a member service center? It's a RIPE NCC service center. Oh, they change it every time. But it's full of very nice people. It's around the corner from the main ballroom. They have coffee there as well and cookies. So if you have any question, any issue you want to raise, just walk in there as well. Now, if you have any questions for either Rob or me, be happy to answer them if we can. Don't be shy. If you don't have any questions, we can't let you go. You'll have to sit it out.
No questions, no lunch.
Exactly. All right, thank you very much.
And may I remind you that at 2 o'clock we start with the first plenary session of this 52nd RIPE meeting. And have a nice lunch and see you all there.